On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field too when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Chantilly Toyota. Let's ride together.
All right, everybody. This is a very different episode of Redskins Talk. And why is it different? Because the Redskins won a game. Huzzah! Seriously, Rich Tandler and I were up in New York last Sunday. That was an excellent game to watch. Rich is here with us. Tandler, what'd you think of that football game?
Yeah, I mean, I think even, you know, tuning into it from a third-party disinterested perspective, yeah, I think it was an entertaining game. It was back and forth. There was, you know, there were a lot of mistakes. It certainly was not the, by both sides, certainly wasn't the cleanest game we've ever seen.
A lot of dumb penalties.
In a lot of different ways.
Yep.
But, yeah, it was entertaining, and, you know, the Redskins got that win that they needed. And, you know, I called it wrong. I said the Redskins were driving down with coming inside the two-minute warning. If they scored a touchdown, they'd win. They kicked a field goal, they'd lose. But they kicked the field goal and they won.
You did say that. I was sitting next to you when you said that, and I'm glad you were wrong, honestly, because it makes just D.C. a more fun town. If the Redskins dropped to 0-3, it was going to be a mess around here. But at 1-2, with Cleveland coming to town, there's some reason, maybe not quite optimism, but the wheels aren't falling off, and folks can breathe a little bit. Let me say what else we got going on in the podcast. Rich and I are going to talk, obviously do our thing, but we are very excited. We've got Nate from Barstool coming on to talk all things Redskins, and I'm going to ask him about his weird affinity for Bloody Marys. And we also have Mary Kay Cabot from the Cleveland Plain Dealer to come on and preview the Browns matchup. And she's going to tell us why the Redskins better not sleep on the Browns. And I think they better not. Tandler, did you notice the line opened at 9.5 for Skins Browns? That seems awfully high.
Yeah, I did see that. Of course, I'm sure you got the line before I did, since that's your thing. But anyway, yeah, you know, I wrote in my need to know column on realredskins.com this morning.
Plug.
This is almost too much of a trap to be a trap. You know, it's just too obvious that the Redskins can't sleep on this team. They went to Miami last week. They took the, you know, probably should have won. Took the Dolphins to overtime.
They were right in that Ravens game too.
Yeah, right, exactly. They were 20-0 on the Ravens.
Right. I think if the Skins were coming into this thing 2-1, it might be kind of a trap game. But they're 1-2, man. They need wins desperately. They can't mess around.
Right, and you know, it's like I said, it's too obvious of a trap for it to be a trap.
All right, a lot has happened. So as jubilant as the scene was in Giant Stadium, a whole bunch of guys got hurt. D-Hall is done. Breland is going to be at least a week. I'm guessing probably 2 or 3 weeks. Lichtensteiger to the IR, which is a really big deal, and Sean LaValle. So what the hell happens next? I think the offensive...
Hold on, back up a little. Sean LaValle not to IR.
I'm sorry. Yeah, he's hurt. He's not on the IR. But I think he's still at least 2-3 weeks. That's just my guess. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, week to week is what Jay Gruden said. So that usually means you're going to miss at least a game. He said the same thing about Lichtensteiger, of course, and Lichtensteiger is done for at least 8 weeks. He could come back. You don't have to designate anybody to returned anymore and in the reserve. If you just pick one guy who went on the roster since the start of the season, went on IR since the start of the season, and bring him back. So he could come back, a calf injury, you never know about those, but after 8 weeks, he could be the one they pick to come back depending on what things look like in 8 weeks.
Well, I also think part of the Lichtensteiger to the IR, while his calf is injured now, he's also dealing with a back injury that comes and goes. I mean, it's back spasm. So I think, to me, that comes into the equation to place him on the IR. But I think the bigger picture is what happens for the Redskins at offensive line. I think it's safety. Losing D. Hall is obviously a blow, but Will Blackman's a good player and can slide right in there, and they've got good players behind them, and Duke Iheanacho and DeShazer Everett. I mean, I think the secondary is a deep unit. They're able to pull up Kendall Fuller to the active roster. I think the O-line, I mean, we saw it in the Giants game. They had to slide Trent Williams to left guard, bring in Ty Inseki, and Trent might not love it, but that line looked pretty good. I know, Taylor, we've butted heads on the ability of Ari Quanjo for a while. I know you expect him to start Sunday against the Browns, and I suppose I do too, kind of by default, but I'll be very curious to see what Quanjo can give on the starting lineup.
Well, we should find out for probably one game. John Sullivan came in from, he's an ex-Viking. He did miss last year with a back injury, so he hasn't played since the end of the 2014 season. But, I think he'll get a crash course. I think they will want to get him in there at center and get Spencer Long over to left guard.
I agree. How long do you think it takes Sullivan to be able to play?
Well, maybe if he's been, he was in training camp this season for the Vikings, so that certainly helps. It's like Trent Williams said it the other day, though, there are so many intricate things they do in the middle of that line, so many subtle little calls and techniques and things like that. It's very difficult to pick up, even for a veteran. I think Sullivan came in the league in 07, I want to say.
No, he was the same draft as Lichtensteiger. I believe Lichtensteiger was fourth round of 08, and Sullivan was sixth round of 08.
Okay.
So these guys are the same age. There's fans out there that are like, on Twitter, excited that they're getting younger. I was like, dude, they're not getting younger.
Yeah, maybe a few months or something. But Lichtensteiger, obviously he had the calls down. He did get pushed around a little lighter than they would like in the position. Of course, replacing Lichtensteiger could have happened during the draft if Ryan Kelly, the Alabama center, had stuck around a few more picks. It could have happened if Brian Stork had either A, passed his physical, or B, really wanted to play here. It's kind of been in the works.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll see. Just like Andrew Hall, you have to wonder what the long-term prospects for Lichtensteiger are 2017 and beyond.
Yeah, I think that writing's kind of on the wall, but for both guys, frankly. But
yeah,
like you said with Lichtensteiger, they've been trying to upgrade there for a while. It just hasn't worked. I mean, a guy like Austin Reeder looks awfully interesting for them right now, because it's Long having to play center is what makes left guard such a problem, because they like Long at guard,
Played there last year and they made the playoffs.
Right. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think I wrote about this today, and you and I talked about this on Slack today, that the offense is due to explode at some point. They are just putting up too many yards to not score. Obviously, the red zone struggles have been a serious topic, but the guys on the Junkies talked about it on Tuesday, that eventually it's just going to happen. It almost by default.
Yeah, I think they're third in yards per play. They're not horrible. They're not good on third down, but they're not great.
Cousins is second in the league in passing yards, and he's only like 30 yards behind Drew Brees.
Yeah, and you know, they just, you know, a few things will click in the red zone. They're not going to be as bad in the red zone as they have been all year. You know, that's just kind of goes cyclically, I think. I think they need to find Jordan Reed a little more and maybe run a little more often.
That's what I was going to say is they started to run the ball a lot better. I mean, that fourth quarter, the game, what ended up being the game-winning field goal drive, they ran the ball right at the Giants, and it was impressive, and the first time they've done that all season.
Yeah, and surprising. I was going to go, when did they come?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they're stuck in it around, but they, you know, they kept handing it to Jones, and he found some yardage. He still has some work to do with the running back, I think. You still see, I looked at the game again on Tuesday morning, and you know, you just saw a lot of times, he should have gone, you know, he should have cut left, or, you know, he ran into this guy instead of trying to, you know, zip by him and make some yards. So
it's tough with Matt Jones because when he tries to do too much, we hammer him for it. You know, he tries to break the play outside, or, you know, he tries to do a juke move in the backfield. I mean, relatively simple stuff, but we're like, oh, you can't do that. And then in the Giants game, there were runs where he had bigger holes had he gone off script, to borrow a phrase that Kirk Cousins is making famous. Had he broken away from the designed hole earlier. But then it's like, it's a bit of damned if you do, damned if you don't for Matt Jones.
Right. I mean, he had 60 yards. You know, he's on pace to get 800 this year, despite not having carried a whole lot. You know, I think we're getting pretty much what we expected out of Matt Jones.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, if he figures this out, if he watches film, you know, I think he's a very conscientious kid. And he, you know, he's going to look up, he sees this stuff and is able to react and make these little corrections, he could be very good. Not just, you know, competent and you know, getting enough out of the position. He could be very good. He's got the size. He is fast once he gets up ahead of steam. They threw it to him a few times the other day, which I've been wanting him to do all year. I called that
on our Saturday night preview. Do you remember that? I said they got to get the ball to him, and if it is through the air so they get him outside the pocket, that's the right move.
Yeah, get him out of the box and get him up against some DBs.
Can we make a wager? If you're saying 800 yards, I will take the over on that, but you got to give me some sort of guarantee of like 14 games or something.
I'm not betting against him going. That's just what he's on pace for right now.
Okay.
So
I don't know that he quite gets to 1,000, but I think he gets 950-ish, something like that.
He could.
And honestly, it's more on the coaching staff giving him the carries than it is worrying about his talent. Although, with what could happen along the offensive line could change a lot of this conversation. You know, it was this time last year where the run game fell apart.
Right.
And yes, very similar circumstances.
Yeah.
Cleveland coming to town, how can the Redskins lose?
How do you lose to a team that's inferior? We can talk about how bad they are, but, you know, they're clearly inferior. You let them hang around. You don't score when you get in the red zone. You kick some field goals. Maybe you turn the ball over, and they turn into a quick score, get some momentum. All of a sudden, it's a two-point game in the fourth quarter, and they take it down and kick a field goal. Time runs out with it. That's the formula for the upset here.
Luckily, their kicker missed three kicks last week, including a game winner.
That's true.
All right, this is the last question, Rich. Currently, NFC East standings, Eagles are 2-0. I'm sorry, 3-0. Eagles are 3-0. Cowboys are 2-1. Giants are 2-1. Redskins are 1-2. What are the chances the Redskins win the NFC East?
I think they've got a good shot as anybody. I'll go 1-4 right now. I think they've got
25% chance.
I think that coming up here in a few weeks. They've got their meat grinder coming.
The hype machine is out of control for Carson Wentz.
Yes.
I've seen tweets comparing him to Peyton Manning and Brett Favre in the last 24 hours.
Some more random things over his head coach. Yeah, those were just hyped up fans. They're a coach that's really got, you know, needs to tamp things down a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. He has looked great, not to take anything away from him, but
yeah,
it's three games, man. Three games.
Yeah, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, come on, man. He's up on the guy. So, yeah, I'll go with that. I think the Redskins are probably a little bit better. You know what? Right now, those games against Arizona and Carolina aren't looking as daunting as they did before. They're still better teams.
Right.
But they don't look as daunting as they did before.
That's the thing with all the headaches that come around schedule time about, oh my God, the second hardest schedule, the 10th hardest schedule, who knows? Football evolves not even year to year, but in quarters of the season. I mean, when somebody saw the Redskins on their schedule last year, and if they saw the Redskins week 3, they were like, oh man, we got that. If they saw the Redskins week 15, they were probably going to get blown out. Football evolves, and you can't look too far ahead. You can maybe look 2-3 games down the road, but more than that tends to be folly.
Yep. No doubt.
All right. RT, you're my guy. Thanks for coming on, and I will talk to you soon.
Sure thing.
See ya. Now we're going to welcome in Barstool Nate from Barstool Sports. Nate, thank you so much for coming on, man. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, dude. It is, it's a big deal to talk to a Barstool guy. New York City, living the glamorous life up there now.
Oh, it's so glamorous. I'll tell you what, like, after 3 years of working from home, waking up and getting on a train and commuting into an office, it's the most glamorous thing in the world.
Having to wear pants, interact with people.
It's not even joking, like, having to shower has been the biggest change in my life.
So all the countless Arlington bar crawls and happy hours and shot festivals you were going to, you wouldn't take showers before those?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, like, I was good for 2 or 3 a week, but I'm saying, like, showering every day, like, putting on real clothes, going into an office, like Ed, you said, talking to other human beings, it's a big change after not doing that for 3 years. So we're all acclimating. We've been here for about a month. Things are on the up and up, you know. It sucks not being. Thanks for bringing that up. That I'm not in Arlington going to bar crawls. I appreciate you bringing that up.
I'm here to.
But
help.
it's good up here. It's good. I think we're doing good things up here.
Well, dude, congrats on all the success. Let's talk a little Redskins, as the podcast is called Redskins Talk. Kirk Cousins got a lot of criticism the first 2 weeks. Whether or not that's fair is debatable. Week 3, he doesn't score a touchdown. Or, I'm sorry, no, he does. He scores 2, but no interceptions, rather, is where I was going. And yet, he's not really celebrated. It was more the defense making some stops. What is your take on Kirk Cousins through 3 weeks of football?
Look, being an NFL quarterback, this is my spiel on it. Being an NFL QB is the hardest job in the world. It's harder than, like, a brain surgeon. There's like 3 good quarterbacks. And Kirk Cousins is a starter in the NFL. We don't know yet how good he is. This is his, first full year starting, like having the full offseason,
right.
Like all the minicamp, all the reps. We don't know. We still don't know how good he is, how good he could be. There's, plenty of quarterbacks that start out bad and then become like all pros. Like Drew Brees was terrible in San Diego. He turned it around in New Orleans. He came on to play the best, won the Super Bowl. Like, we're so quick to push people out the door, especially QBs that have the hardest job possible in the NFL in all sports, that I hate the week 1 criticism on him when he made good throws. He made several bad ones, but I don't get the running him out of town when we've seen the alternatives. We see, Cutler in Chicago making $8 billion, and he's terrible. We see the quarterback play, all over the map. Like,
right.
Osweiler making, $72 million, whatever it is, to throw picks in Texas. I just don't get what else people want. And spare me on the, oh, he's getting paid $20 million. That's the going rate for a quarterback. Like, I don't care how much he gets paid. I think he's doing a good enough job, and I think he still has a ceiling that he hasn't gotten there yet. Like, and you know what? If this is it, if he is at a ceiling, he's still better than a lot of other QBs in the league. And if we can design a scheme around his strengths, which I think they're doing a decent enough job as of doing, like, you know, he doesn't have to throw the bomb downfield, and then when he does, you know, hit Deshaun with a perfect pass. I think we can win games with Kirk, and, you know, I don't expect him to be Aaron Rodgers. I don't expect him to be Tom Brady, but I think he's a lot better than people are giving him credit for.
I got to say, that was the most rational take. You know who you sounded like there? Granted, it was different words and less, like, coaching twang. You sounded like Jay Gruden, man. Every week, Gruden explains that playing quarterback in the NFL is the hardest job there is. I mean, maybe like Obama's job is harder. Clearly there's harder jobs. But it's the hardest job in sports, I would say.
It has to be. And I just look around at every other team. It's like, their quarterback sucks. Their quarterback sucks. Like, we have a good one, and people are going to... I just hate the way DC runs people out of town, especially after, like, week one.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, let's give the quarterback, like, maybe a couple more weeks. Like, if he is, especially after last season when he, like, was phenomenal.
That's what I was going to say, is last year he was so great. Now, I get it was half the season. I mean, it was really the second half of the year. But there's enough tape out there to show you he can be great, that the overreaction to week one and then maybe week two was just so fierce. And I think DC is so weird, man, because there's still this staunch RG3 faction that hates Kirk. And it's just bizarre. I mean, most cities, I think...
I don't know why Kirk would want to re-sign here next year. I don't know, like, oh, I'm going to play for a fan base where half of them hate me because they're so fixated on a quarterback from 2-3 years ago. Like,
yeah,
I have to get over the RG3 thing, and we have to, you know, we have to realize that, what are we going to do, draft another quarterback, try to develop another quarterback, and then be bad for another 10 years?
Yeah.
I think Kirk gives the Skins a good chance to win, and we have to, people just have to get over RG3, have to.
Dude, through three games, he's almost thrown 1,000 yards. He's second in the league behind Drew Brees with passing yards. They move the ball up and down the field. He does miss some throws, but most guys do. He's a pretty accurate passer. Some of that is he doesn't go downfield all that often, but Kirk can run Jay Gruden's and Sean McVay's offense really well, and I think fans need to realize that. It's almost, though, a little disappointing if you think about it. This week was supposed to be RG3's return to DC. How amped up would you have been for that? How wild would that game have been, man? The stands would have been
crazy. I would have come home for it for sure. I mean, it was a dream scenario. Like, having him come home as a starter for the Browns, like, with all this, you know, he's still doing his Instagram bits. He's still tweeting nonsense on Twitter. Like, I'm never going to stop loving him because of how unaware he is of, like, Earth. Like, he just doesn't get planet Earth at all. Like,
yeah.
He's still doing the same things. And then what really just, like, it didn't make me mad, like, because I don't get mad at stuff RG3 tweets, but, like, reading the reactions to his "everybody just wants to see me fail" tweet,
right.
Like, this city got so behind you. Like, I've never seen a city get more behind an athlete than we did behind RG3. And now he's saying, like, everybody just wants him to fail. Like, it couldn't be less true.
Right.
But he lives in some bizarre world where it's just, like, everybody's out to get him. He's so woe is me.
Yeah.
It's like, give me a break, dude. Like, just, like, what planet does he live on, and why is it so different than the one we live on?
It's certainly different than the one I live on. That much I know.
It just sucks that he's not playing. I really wish that he was playing. I still root for him. I mean, it would be cool if he had some sort of resurgence, like, you know, because he's that, like, polarizing of a guy. But
yeah.
He's obviously done in Cleveland, and he's going to latch on somewhere else, and he's going to have a big to-do about it somewhere else. And Do you think he'll be out of the league in 2 to 3 seasons, or does he still have that raw talent where someone will always give him a chance, like a Kwame Brown, just always be given another chance?
See, I think it's tough because the question with Robert will become, will he go in as a backup somewhere? Because Cleveland was the only job he got this year where he was the starter. And it was still kind of a competition, but I think he and Hugh Jackson had an understanding that barring something unforeseen, he was going to get to start week one. I don't know that he gets that next year. Or
it also could
depend on what happens in Cleveland. I mean, if nobody looks good, Cleveland might be like, all right, let's just keep this going. And who knows?
Not worth the headache. Why is it worth the headache for them to keep him around? Like, is he really that much better than, you know, the next best option?
Yeah.
Probably not.
It's a great question. I mean, if I am at the betting window in Vegas and the only thing I can bet is over under 2.5 years, so what year would that be? That would be week one, 2019, is Robert Griffin III on an NFL roster? Man, I think I'd have to bet no. I mean, just look at the injury history at this point. It's piling up everywhere.
I'm betting with you. I'm betting he will not be on a roster week one, 2019.
All right, I'm going to switch gears a little. Who do you project, non-Kirk Cousins division, who do you project to be the Redskins team MVP end of the year?
Tress Way.
Oh, because he showed the gun in the fake punt?
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, Colt McCoy, his head is on a swivel. Like, Tress Way's gunning for that spot.
Right.
MVP, Jordan Reed, if he stays healthy, like, obviously, he's a... But, major factor.
But clearly defenses are game planning for Jordan right now. He hasn't gotten off like a lot of folks expected yet. Now it's early.
And I love it. If they can take advantage of that, like, double team Reed, but we have to get it to Crowder then. Like,
right.
When we saw them get it to Crowder in the slot, like, you ran for a 50-yard touchdown. And I don't get why they don't go back to the well. Just keep doing that. Keep doing that. Stop double teaming Reed. Reed will get open. And then Deshaun's just stretching the field on the outside. I mean, this team has so many weapons. Like, I'm not sure they've taken even close to advantage of what they actually have.
I agree. I thought Sean McVay's play calling in the second half against the Giants was probably his best all year. He had that bubble screen to Crowder you're talking about. He called a screen earlier in the game to Matt Jones that got called back because of one countless ungodly amount of penalties. I can't remember what the penalty was, but it was the perfect play call. It was like a nice 15-yard gain, got the offense moving, and then, of course, it comes back. But I think McVay is kind of figuring out all his parts right now.
On defense, obviously, Norman has been everything he's built up to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's...
That dude's a stud.
There was a play, I don't know if it was... maybe it was the Dallas game, where he basically was covering two wide receivers at once because he was so quick to realize where the play was going, like how the quarterback was developing, like, his reads, that he basically left his receiver, went to cover another receiver, and, like, made the tackle on it. I was like, damn, that guy's just smart out there. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. But, I mean, Breland out, D-Hall out, our defense is, it's not looking like a bright spot.
Yeah, I'm more worried about the O-line getting through their injuries than I am the secondary, just because I think Blackman's a good player. They have depth at corner. They still haven't even played Kendall Fuller, who I think will give them good snaps. I think Sua Cravens becomes more of a hybrid than just the linebacker spot, starts getting some strong safety work.
He has to be a safety at this point. Like, I don't even know if
he's making plays at linebacker, though. That kid is good.
I want to see him at safety because I think he's like just a game changer back there. Like, I am more worried about the secondary than I guess you are, but... I mean, we still have Stephon Diggs on the schedule. We still have Green Bay on the schedule. We still have, you know, the
AJ Green. AJ Green in London. Dude, like, you should get your bosses to send you to London.
maybe I should. I thought about that a while ago and then I forgot about it.
I'm gonna be there and we can hang out.
I need to get on that. You're right. I will see if I can get over there. Damn, I dropped the ball on that.
Yeah,
That's October what?
It's Halloween in London. I think it'd be pretty entertaining.
All right, I'm going to try to get on that I guess he's gone for the day. So I'm going to try to get on that tomorrow because I forgot about that. And I need to be there.
All right. This is my last point with you, Nate. Are you still doing the Bloody Marys at bars?
All right. Look, my point of that is Bloody Marys don't just have to be in the morning. They don't just have to be at brunch on weekends. You can enjoy a Bloody Mary at any time, any place, anywhere. And if you want one at 8 p.m., you order one at 8 p.m., and you don't have to be ashamed of it. All I'm saying is enjoy a Bloody whenever you want, and don't let society bring you down or tell you what to do. So to answer your question, yes. Yes, I am.
All right, here's what I have to say as a guy who was a bartender for 12 years. Mm-hmm. If the bar is busy and you're going to order a Bloody Mary, I am never coming back to make you another drink that night. So if it's a nice, quiet evening at the bar, I'm happy to make you a good drink. But if it's a packed bar, I'll hand you a Bud Light.
When it's like going out season, and it's like going out and taking fireball shots and pounding 9,000 Bud Lights, I'm not ordering a Bloody.
Okay.
If I'm at dinner at a restaurant or at a bar, like eating dinner at a table, then I'll order a Bloody. I'm not doing it when it's like time to go out to, you know, Clarendon Grill. I'm not drinking one on the dance floor at Clarendon Grill. I'm drinking one like at the table at a restaurant somewhere.
You know how gnarly the floor of Clarendon Grill would be if everybody was drinking Bloody Marys and spilling tomato juice?
I think it would be a nice change of pace.
So I agree with you then. Order what you want when you want it, as long as it's within reason for the scene you're at. But I would much rather you push Orange Crushes at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday than Bloody Marys.
If we were in Dewey, I'll drink an Orange Crush, anytime. But I don't know if an Orange Crush is vibes with, the shit. I'm a big city guy now.
I'm not a city guy anymore. You're a New York City guy.
Yeah, I'm a New York City guy. So we don't do that up here. We drink $19 Blue Moons up here.
You're like Don 30. Draper now. You should be drinking Old Fashions.
Oh yeah, like $33 Old Fashions and stuff like that. We don't drink Orange Crushes. That's for beach folk, not city folk like me.
Last question. Currently, the Philadelphia Eagles sit at 3-0. Dallas and the Giants are 2-1. The Redskins are 1-2. What percent chance do you give the Redskins of winning the NFC East?
Oh, boy. I have two answers. Answer one, the optimistic one, is bad things happen to Philly because Philly deserves bad things to happen to it. So Wentz will get hurt. Doug Peterson will forget how to call plays. And the whole bet will blow up and finish, 5-11, which gives the Skins a good chance of winning the division. But I don't think the Skins can be any better than 8-8. So that's the issue. The Skins are 8-8 at best, and a lot would have to go their way. Just the schedule is really hard, and the defense and O-line are really bad. I'm not giving them a high shot of winning it this year. I think looking to the future, they have a lot of pieces, a lot of parts, and next year, quarterback aside, because who knows what's going to happen there. They have if Kirk, continues playing well and he actually re-ups here, then I think the next 3-4 years, really, really good, really good chance of the Skins doing something special.
They got a little window. I love that your optimistic answer included a star rookie quarterback getting hurt. That's optimism for you.
You don't have to root for the guy to get hurt, but I'm saying it would be beneficial to the Skins' chances of being a good football team.
I understand. Nate, where can folks find your stuff? I know it's at Barstool Nate on Twitter. Plug away, man.
just follow me on the Twitter. If you're into subpar jokes, and then read the website and click on all my blogs, and you'll probably find it somewhat funny and entertaining, and it's better than working, so do that.
Now, if that isn't a sales job, I don't know what is.
I'm somewhat funny, but it's still better than whatever else you have to do.
I'm in. Dude, thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime you need me, I'm a phone call away.
All right, bud. Take care.
A very, very big thank you to our next guest, Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, for joining us. Mary Kay, thanks a lot for taking a few minutes and telling us a little bit about the Browns.
Well, you know what? Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, 0-3, but I was at Skins Giants, so I didn't get to watch what was happening in Miami, but it seemed like the Browns put up a heck of a fight against the Dolphins. How is the Browns' season going so far, even though they are at 0-3?
Well, I'll tell you what, they all really felt that they should have won that game. They fought so hard. They went down there. They had so many injuries. In addition to being down their top two quarterbacks and starting a rookie in Cody Kessler, right before the game, they found out that Joe Hayden couldn't play. He's their number one cornerback. A couple days before that, in practice on Wednesday, Corey Coleman, their top receiver, went down with a broken hand. So it's just been one thing after another. And but I'll tell you, they came out and they fought really, really hard. And it came down to their brand-new kicker who just joined them. That's another thing. Their kicker went down with a knee injury on Friday. So
jeez.
They signed a new guy, Cody Parkey, and he missed three kicks. He had just joined the team for pregame warm-ups, and he missed three kicks, including the game-winning attempt as time expired, a 46-yarder. So they really feel they should have won that game. And then the previous week against the Ravens.
Yeah, they had the huge lead, right?
Yeah, they blew a 20-0 first quarter lead. But in addition to that, they came back at the end, and they had an opportunity to throw the game-winning touchdown. And Terrell Pryor caught a pass at the 10 and tried to flip the ball to the ref. And the cornerback stood up at the same time and got hit with the ball, and they called him for taunting when he wasn't taunting at all. So it was a horrible taunting call, and that, you know, put them back, kept them back at the 30 instead of at the 10 with, you know, seconds left. So they really feel like they should have won both games. And, you know, this is a team that fights really, really hard, and it's not as bad as the record seems.
All right. Well, that is good to know, because I know plenty of Redskins fans and some surrounding the team are kind of expecting this to be a bit of a walkthrough for Washington on Sunday. But the coaching staff, Jay Gruden, was adamant that his team knows they have to be ready for the Browns. He said he knows Hugh Jackson personally and that the Browns are coming to D.C. to fight for a win. So take us through, obviously RG3 was there, then McCown, now they're on to Kessler, but didn't Terrell Pryor end up taking snaps at quarterback last week as well?
Yeah, Terrell took 14 snaps out of the Wildcat, and yeah, so that was something that I think you'll see more of this weekend. I mean, they're trying to take some pressure off the rookie quarterback.
Right.
And, you know, Hugh likes to do different things. So I think that Terrell will probably play out of the Wildcat more. He had some, you know, he gained some, you know, got some yards out of it. He scored a 3-yard touchdown out of the Wildcat. He ran for 15 yards, and he completed a 26-yard pass to Gary Barnage. So he accounted for 200 of the Browns' 430 yards in the game. He caught
that's
eight
pretty good.
For 100. Yeah, he was running back and forth from receiver to quarterback. I mean, it was an incredible performance by him. He really tried to strap the team on his back and win this game. And, of course, they almost did it had it not been for the three missed field goals.
Oh, man, I can only imagine the stuff that kicker's going to hear on Twitter. How much do Buckeye fans love seeing this out of Terrell Pryor? I'm sure there's a lot of overlap between Browns fans and Buckeye fans.
Oh, I think they're loving it. You know, I mean, people still have really great memories of him at Ohio State. And, you know, he's welcomed back at Ohio State now again, finally, as of this summer after the sanctions that he had there. And it's really a great feel-good story for him to be able to, you know, he was cut four times at quarterback. And,
yeah.
There's just a lot going on with him. So it's just a good story for the fans, and it's good for Terrell.
That's good. I mean, and well, didn't he get, wasn't the issue there at Ohio State, like tattoos, all things considered, what the NCAA is dealing with now between Baylor and Penn State and wherever else you look, tattoos seem so unimportant in the grand scheme of things. Defensively with the Browns, the Redskins, I just wrote a story that the Skins offense is moving the ball really well. They're just not scoring well quite yet. Now, a lot of that is they've been pretty inept in the red zone. What do the Skins need to prepare for from Cleveland defensively?
Well, you know what? It's a scrappy, really young defense. And, you know, I thought that they did some good things. They're blitzing. They're getting some good pressure. They're not really getting very many sacks, but they are getting some, you know, some good pressure, and they're giving some different looks. Ray Horton's a good defensive coordinator, and, you know, and he knows what to do, even with all these young guys that he's got. Now, they're losing another pass rusher for this game in Nate Orchard, but it just seems like guys keep rolling in there. It's almost like ignorance is bliss. They don't realize that they're young, and some of them are just off the streets. You know, some of them got cut in final cuts and came in and played in this last game, including Brienne Body Calhoun, who had a pick six. And then you've got Corey Lemonnier, who came in from San Francisco, and he forced Ryan Tannehill to fumble at the end of the game to set up the potential game-winning kick.
Gotcha.
So there's young guys that are coming in, rolling in there, and kind of playing over their heads a little bit. So they can expect scrappy. They can expect these guys to fight until the end, and some surprises out of some of the young guys.
Some of those names sound like they're putting your spell check to work as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And my pronunciation check to work.
Yeah, I bet. You did good there. You nailed what sounded like some French pronunciations to me. So the kind of the elephant in the room for you talking to a D.C. guy, Robert Griffin III. Obviously, he's not playing now. What is the latest with his injury, and will he get back into that starting role, assuming he comes back healthy?
You know, it's a good question. Nobody really knows for sure. It's all going to depend on how the bone heals. Nobody can really predict how his caracoid bone and his shoulder is going to heal, or how Josh McCown's broken clavicle, broken collarbone is.
What are the odds?
We
both
don't really
those guys.
Know.
Right.
Yeah, both of them. Back-to-back weeks, week one and week two. But, you know, I think it actually represents a major setback for Robert, because they were really trying to groom him to be their quarterback of the future here. Hugh Jackson believed in him, really liked him, but this was a learning year for him, and they still view him as a young quarterback, even though he's been around a while. They view him in that sense, that he's young and learning and still needed to work on his pocket presence and all those things that you guys knew of him
sure.
in Washington. You know, the things that he needed to work on, that was what was supposed to happen this year. Now that's not going to happen, and, you know, if he doesn't make it back this season, then they're going to have to look long and hard at drafting a quarterback. So this was a very pivotal injury for the Browns and for RG3.
Well, and even – I know it's tough to judge because he got hurt week one, but I know you saw a million snaps in training camp and preseason. What do you think of Griffin's play? I think removing all the off-field stuff that seems to follow that guy, for better or for worse, he could not get rid of the ball in time to be an NFL quarterback during the back half of his career in D.C. Did that improve in Cleveland?
Well, that's a major thing that they had been working on. He went out and worked with Tom House, the quarterback guru in L.A. He was working on those mechanics. Hugh Jackson had been working with him, Pep Hamilton. That was a big point of emphasis for him. But he was still struggling on third down. The one game that he had, they went 2-for-10 on third down. So that's where he's going to have to pick it up. If he can't win on third down, then he's not going to be able to play this game. So that was what this was going to be all about, getting rid of the ball quicker, making faster decisions, and also sliding.
Right.
And, you know, throwing it away when you need to.
Right. And, you know, as much as some injuries are beyond your control, some of the stuff with Robert, you begin to wonder, is he ever going to understand how to just take care of his body a little bit and just make smarter decisions? You don't, a lot of times you don't need to go for the extra yard or whatever the case is. Mary Kay, thank you so much for joining us. What's the best way for people to follow you? Maybe Twitter or Facebook if you're on those functions.
Twitter is at Mary Kay Cabot. And then of course, all of our stuff is on Cleveland.com.
Okay. Awesome. I already follow you on Twitter, but I'm going to encourage everyone that listens to do the same. Thank you very much for joining us, and I will see you on Sunday.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You know what time it is. Time for Tish's Take, the thoughts of Mitch Tischler, photograph extraordinaire and local celebrity. This week, Mitch is brought to us by, it's kind of tough for me to remember the last beer I saw Mitch drinking. We were in New York City, and it was a long night, but I believe he had a Bell's Two Hearted. Take it away, Tischler.
Before the game on Sunday, as I was working through the effects of the last beer that JP saw me drink, I was standing about the 10-yard line shooting Odell Beckham Jr. warming up. and out of the corner of my eye, I see a silhouette of a football, and bang, it bounced right off my shoulder. I didn't think much of it, but as the national anthem finished up a few minutes later, Nick Sundberg walks over and tells me that Tress was aiming for me on that punt. I joked with Tress that we were going to have words this week about that malicious attack. He, of course, apologized and responded that he didn't think he could be that accurate, even if he threw it. Funny the way that worked out. But in reality, special teamers don't get a lot of love, especially Redskin special teamers. But Tress, Nick, and Dustin are some of the more personable guys I've come across in my time covering the team, so it's nice to see them get a little shine this week. And who knows, with Dustin leading the NFL in field goals through three games, maybe there'll be a spot in Hawaii or Miami or wherever they're playing the Pro Bowl this year, and he can bring along his buddies with him. This has been Tish's Take.
That's it. Another week of Redskins talk is in the books. I am JP Finley, your Redskins insider for CSN Mid-Atlantic. This show was pretty awesome. You got to figure, my man Rich Tandler always starts with us. Then we went to NYC, talked to Barstool Nate, and then all of the details on the Cleveland Browns from Mary Kay Cabot, who dominates that beat. So all in all, a very productive podcast. I am hopeful to bring one more and talk to a player this week. Stay tuned for that. In the meantime, check me out on Twitter at JPFinleyCSN, Facebook.com/JPFinleyCSN, and on our website, CSNMidAtlantic.com, for a ton of coverage. If you made it this far, let me know on social. I owe you a beer. Also, subscribe on iTunes and rate us on iTunes. We could use all of the ratings. If they're bad ratings, don't do it. But if they're good ratings, I want them. Thanks a lot.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Ford Lincoln. Let's ride together.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.